Blog Talk Radio.
You must have been in a place so dark you couldn't feel the light, reaching for you through that stormy cloud. Now here we are gathered in our little hometown. This can't be the way you meant to draw a crowd. Oh, I, that's what I keep asking. Was there anything I could have said or done? Oh, I had no clue you were masking a troubled soul. God only knows what went wrong. And why you leave the stage in the middle of a song?
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to your place. Tonight, we have a different subject for you. We're going to take a shocking look at teen suicide. We've been reminded this last week of an epidemic that is coming against our youth, teen suicide. For people in church, we feel so sheltered from the things of the world. What we first forget as adults is that what seems so stupid in the news regarding issues like gender identification, drug experimentation, teen pregnancy, and current morality, to name a few, these are part of our kids, the right now world. We need to remember what it was like for us at that age. Finding our identity is a big part of being a teenager. We start to see during that time what natural talents we have, what skills are easier to perform, and start to match our dreams to reality. What we see as shelter from these issues with church can actually be a wall that our youth can feel crushed up against if parents, church teachers, and church leaders treat these issues as not real issues. We need to all understand that it does take a village to raise a child. Wild Bill has mentioned many times that he felt like he had several parents due to the people in his church plugging into his life. As parents, we all know that teenagers go through so many normal changes that match the signs of depression and thoughts of suicide. This show tonight is going to provide clinical information that was provided to a church by a mental health professional. This topic has the issue of prescribed medical solutions in our research. Many of you will be offended at this and want to make it totally a spiritual problem. And that's fine if you're praying for a covering all the time for your church youth. This is an excuse to not be aware. If you have a health issue, you take medication. Your health issue is real to you. It's obvious from the statistics that teen suicide is a real problem for our youth. This is not just a youth issue, so watch for these signs in adults. And now we're going to hear from Wild Bill.
Well, hello, Starlin. Hello. Thank you so much for getting this show kicked off. Can you hear me?
I can.
Hello? Okay.
I hear you.
Thank you. Okay. I'm talking. Thank you so much for getting this show kicked off. And I want to encourage everyone, if you're a parent or if you're someone that knows someone's parents, if you're a teacher, a pastor, a youth leader, or you just care about people in your church, get you a pencil and a piece of paper and take notes of some of the things you're going to hear tonight. An earthquake is bad, but the aftershock of an earthquake is even worse. And my heart's broke because I have friends that are going through this issue right now, and there's no words that can be said. There's no explanations. There's no way to provide comfort. There's no way to try to let them think that everything's okay. And then there's always that other side of people who always want to place blame, always want to try to bring negativity into the issue and don't have any wisdom at all in what they say, and they end up hurting people instead of helping people. And there's some things here to the show that I went through hours of listening to different programs, trying to find something to bring it to be constructive. And because there's so many different viewpoints, some people want to go into this new age medication and counseling that goes into things. And the main problem is the normal signs of being a teenager is some of the exact same things that they tell you to watch for. And so these people trying to say, well, put them on Ritalin, put them on this, you know, and all this medication stuff. As people of faith, we understand that we're in a spiritual warfare. But we also understand that there is pressures that are happening day to day in our children's lives. We feel so sheltered sometimes that we forget the reality of right now for them, the you know, this is their generation. I mean, we don't like to think of it as being over the hill or not being about us, but everything is targeted for the teenagers and the people probably up to their mid-20s. They are the targeted generation right now of all the culture shock, of all the things that are going on, and we sort of make fun of and flip our nose up at, say, how stupid this is. I'm telling you that there needs to be a personal accountability of everybody in a church, because you should have love for your fellow brothers and sisters, and you shouldn't have to wait till, like I did, as an aftershock to do more research into this. You should plug in and find some things. Now, there's ways that you can confront a child that you might be worried about, and if some of these things are going to be talked about on here, and I'm sorry, there's going to be some things that may offend some people. The speaker was not the best of the speakers of them, but the way they presented it, I felt like, was more to what we need to hear as people of faith than any others that I could find. You may argue with me on that, but this is the best I could do on this. I have reached out to a pastor that is, he's a counselor. He was grief counseling. And that, you know, to maybe come up with some things to let us know after shock, how to deal with these sort of things, to be a blessing instead of a stumbling block to families that are going through these issues. So anyway, I'll say again, refer this show to people, take notes, share those notes with people in your church, and please remember it's all of our responsibility to put a prayer covering over our children. School has just started or about to start around the country, and we need to remember what our young people are facing. So, Charlotte, you'll go ahead and kick off the show for us. I really appreciate it.
Okie doke. Let's have a listen.
For today, it's Youth Suicide Prevention, and I'm going to be going over some statistics for youth suicide, also talking about risk factors, warning signs, and then most importantly, how do we have that conversation with our youth if we're concerned that they might be thinking about suicide? And then lastly, one of the most important parts is knowing what some of the resources are out there for a youth that is suicidal, so that you don't have to feel like you have to do everything if you're concerned about a loved one. So getting started, I want to point out a couple of things. One is that I don't know all of you guys in this room, but I do know the statistics around suicide. I know that many of us have had suicidal thoughts ourselves. I know that many of us have maybe even made a suicide attempt and have survived that attempt. Many of us might have had a loved one that's died by suicide. Many of us might be in here specifically because you might be concerned about a youth in your life, whether that's personal or professional. So I mention that because you never know what a heavy topic like this might bring up for you. So if anything that I say or anything that you see today really evokes some emotion in you, please take care of yourself. So if that means stepping out, stretching, taking a break, talking to someone that you care about, or even talking with me after, which I will stay after for anyone that would like to speak with me, it's so important to take care of yourself in all this as well. All right. Okay, and the slides up here? All right. So I mentioned resources. So I did want to start off with sharing a resource, and this will really fit into the presentation when I get into the latter part, which is how to help somebody that's at risk for suicide, how to help a youth. So this is a resource. It's actually not just for youth, but it's for all individuals that might be thinking about suicide. It's a 24-hour suicide crisis hotline. It's actually part of the organization that I work for, D.D. Hirsch Mental Health Services, actually has the nearest call center for this hotline, and it covers all of L.A. and Orange County. What's really great, it's a 24-hour resource. It's also confidential. So if you're concerned about a youth in your life, or anybody for that matter, you can literally pick up the phone and get immediate feedback on how to help that person at any time of the day or any time of the night. So it's not just for that suicidal person. So yes, it's a hotline for people that are thinking about suicide, also for youth that are thinking about suicide. But it's also a resource for you if you're concerned about a loved one. Oftentimes, even if you've been through trainings like this, you have increased knowledge about how to help. But with suicide, each specific situation is going to be very different from one person to the next. And so sometimes you want immediate feedback on, hey, this is exactly what's happening. What should I do next? And you can literally pick up that phone and call. In addition, we think outside the box with this hotline. I can give you one example where we had a school, actually, it was a college student, and there was a college freshman that was in class, and the teacher identified with that person that person was at risk for suicide. That person was thinking about suicide. And so the teacher listened and did a really good job of supporting that person, but also kind of just didn't know what to do next. But she did know about the 24-hour suicide crisis hotline. So what she did is she actually picked up the phone, was very honest with the student, and said, you know what, I really care about you. I'm here to help, but I just don't have all the answers. So let's do this together. We're going to do this one step at a time together. That's the key, so that that person doesn't feel alone. And actually called the hotline, explained to the crisis counselor what was going on with that particular student. And then the student actually got on the phone with a crisis counselor while the teacher sat there as a support. So that's kind of one example about how this could be a good resource. The number for that hotline is at the end of this presentation, but in case anyone wants to have it to start off with, it's 877-727-4747. So that's 877-727-4747. And again, it's a resource for anyone having thoughts about suicide. This includes our youth, and also a resource if you're concerned about a loved one. So I did want to mention that before moving forward, because again, when we get to the linking that person up to help, that's going to be something that's really important to know about. All right, moving forward. Okay. So I wanted to give you guys some information on the suicide statistics. And I will break this down for our youth population as well. One thing I want to talk about before I even get into these is these are really big. These are really big numbers. But we know that these are really just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to suicide. There are so many factors that are really going to influence and influence these numbers, most of which would be the stigma associated with suicide. So when you look at, you know, how many people have had thoughts about suicide, this is off what people are willing to disclose to us. And when somebody has when there's this much stigma with suicide, we know that we're not really even beginning to get to the depths of the numbers behind suicide. So with that being said, you guys can take a look here at the screen beside me. So the top part is just, the numbers are from 2013, so we always have them a couple years behind. But we had 15.6 million with thoughts about suicide. This is for the general population, and then we'll get to the numbers on youth. Then we had about 1.3 million attempts. So these are people that made a suicide attempt. And then we had over 41,000 people that have died by suicide. And again, remember that these are probably a lot higher. Then looking at our youth, for our 10 to 14-year-olds, it's the third leading cause of death for this age group. So generally, suicide is actually the 10th leading cause of death, but when you break it up for our young people, our 10 to 14-year-olds, it jumps to the third leading cause of death. So that's telling us that this is a big problem. We need to increase our awareness. We need to be having these conversations with our youth, and we need to let them know that they're not alone with their thoughts about suicide. Then looking at the 15 to 24-year-old range, it's the second leading cause of death, so it jumps up again. So again, these are huge, huge, huge numbers. Going more into youth suicide statistics, a young person dies every 1 hour and 43 minutes. So in the time that you basically made your way over here to the time that this presentation has ended to maybe when you're on your way out, statistically speaking, we'll have a youth that has actually died by suicide. And then it says 16% of high school students report having seriously considered suicide. So this is a big problem, for all ages within our youth category. One in five teens at any given time are thinking about suicide from a statistical standpoint. So a lot of times we do community outreach. That's one of the things we do in the program that I work with. And we oftentimes do presentations for adolescents, and we'll say that statistic that one in five teens will be thinking about suicide at any given time. And it's scary to think about, statistically speaking, how many people just in the room could be thinking about suicide. So whenever we do our presentations for our youth, we really make sure that we're available. And I will tell you, probably every single presentation I do, especially with our youth, I will get kids that come up to me and tell me that they're thinking about suicide, or I also very oftentimes get that they are worried about a friend that has told them that they're suicidal and they don't know what to do to help them. So again, these numbers are, very, very, very big, and it's a very, very, very big problem. Our lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth are four times more likely to attempt suicide. So what's important about this to look at is it's not identifying as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, et cetera. It's about the social support reaction that they've had when they have disclosed if they're lesbian, gay, bisexual, et cetera. So it's about the social support. If they have a positive social support in their life that's supportive, then it doesn't put them at higher risk as if they have a big negative change in their social support reaction. And then I have on here, you know, I get a lot of questions, and I forgot to mention that we do have a period after this, after the initial presentation of a question and answer. So if you guys come across any questions, write them down, remember them so that you guys get a chance to ask me them. But I oftentimes in the presentations will get, you know, what is the percentage of this or what is the percentage of, you know, this religion or ethnicity or whatnot for suicide. And so that's why we have the suicideology.org website because it really breaks it down. Also, the CDC has information there. And if you're curious about any particular, you know, age group or ethnicity or religion, et cetera, we have all that information and can provide that to you. So I want to talk about risk factors, but actually, before I even get into this slide, I kind of want to talk about, you know, how does suicide happen? You know, how does a youth get from, you know, having thoughts about suicide to acting on those thoughts about suicide? So I want you guys to think about suicide as a continuum. So on this side, on the you know, on this part of the continuum, you have somebody, you have a youth that is having thoughts about suicide. They are not very often, but there are thoughts that emerge that, you know, where they are thinking about killing themselves. But if you talk with them, they have zero intent to ever act on their thoughts about suicide. So they, I'm struggling emotionally. I'm really going through a hard time. I'm having thoughts about suicide, but I don't think I would ever act on those thoughts about suicide. And then way over here on the continuum, you have, you know, the person, the youth that has had thoughts about suicide, has really been struggling, feels like they are in so much emotional pain that there's nothing they can do to get out of the pain. And they've actually decided to act on those thoughts about suicide. And so act is kind of the key word that pushes them over here on this continuum. And therefore, they've devised a plan, a method, how they're going to kill themselves. All the details are in place. So remember that not everyone having thoughts about suicide is in the same place from one person to the next. So each situation is going to be unique. So it's about really finding out where they are on that continuum and trying to help them in that way. Also, we know that 90% of the people that die by suicide do have a diagnosable mental illness. So in jumping back to the risk factors up here, so again, having a mental illness is going to put somebody at much higher risk because just of the numbers, like I said, mentioned earlier, that 90% of the people who die by suicide do have a diagnosable mental illness. Going back to risk factors, substance abuse, definitely a risk factor. Aggressive tendencies or impaired impulse control. Just having access to a firearm is going to put our youth at significantly higher risk. So what we know about that is I talked about this continuum, and so kind of where that person kind of crosses over to the intent of acting on those thoughts, you know, where they, you know, where we're worried about an actual attempt, we know that even if a youth has been somewhere on this continuum of suicidal thoughts and thought, well, if I ever acted on my thoughts about suicide, you know, I would use, you know, blank method to kill myself, and it was not a firearm. We know that if there's that triggering event, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that next. So if there's that triggering event where that youth has kind of crossed over onto this end of the continuum and they decided to act on those suicidal thoughts and they don't have access to the means that they had earlier identified, but there's access to a firearm, we know that they're more likely going to be using that firearm. So again, this is not a discussion of, you know, should we have firearms or should we not? This is just education to know that, you know, if you have a youth that's at risk for suicide, we really want to do some safety planning about having access to a firearm in the home. All right, and then suicide in the family is a risk factor for our youth. So in talking about that, a lot of people want to know, does suicide run in the family? You know, what is the body of knowledge behind that? And I do want to talk about that. So there's been a lot of research out there. They're still doing research, and there is no identified gene at this point to link suicide. But we do know that there's a genetic predisposition to a lot of our mental illnesses. And like I mentioned earlier, 90% of the people that die by suicide are struggling with a mental illness. So there's that oftentimes paired with modeling. So, you know, I'm a youth, and I'm feeling like I'm in so much emotional pain, and I feel like there's just no way I can get out of this pain. And you know what? My mom had a similar, you know, emotional struggle, and the only way that she got out of her pain was to kill herself. And so maybe that's the only way I'm going to be able to escape this pain that I'm feeling. So for suicide in the family, it really is pairing the, the genetic predisposition to mental illness with modeling from main caregivers or more, main people in that person's life. And then a history of suicide attempts is also a risk factor. Exposure to physical abuse, verbal abuse, or bullying is another risk factor here. And then before moving on to the other side, I want to kind of go back to something that we call ambivalence. Like kind of goes off the example I used earlier, that we truly believe in the field of suicidology that every youth and every person, for that matter, that's having thoughts about suicide, it's not that they want to die, it's that they want to rid themselves of that emotional pain that they're feeling. So we often say, we do work with suicide attempt survivors, and one of our attempt survivors gave this example, and he said, take your hand and put it in front of your face, literally cover your face, and imagine living your life with this following you around every single part of your day. Imagine trying to fall asleep with this cloud of pain, which is symbolizing this hand in front of your face. Imagine trying to wake up and go about your day. Imagine if for our kids that are trying to get ready and go to school and deal with our peers, right, that are just covered in this emotional pain. So for that example, he said, if you were to tell me that you could wave a magic wand and take away this pain that I'm feeling, I would want to live. It's about wanting to get rid of this pain. So that's what we talk about ambivalence, that we truly feel that every youth and every adult, for that matter, that's thinking about suicide, yes, has a part of them that wants to die, but there is a part of them that wants to live because it's more about ridding themselves of that emotional pain. Okay. So going to the other side here, chronic pain or major physical illness. And with that, the reason why this is a risk factor is actually kind of similar to walking around, with this emotional pain in your face. So if you have a chronic condition, a medical condition, it can be really difficult to go about your day and, do kind of with that same example. So it can definitely become a risk factor for suicide. And then we hear again, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning are 8 times the attempts and 6 times higher risk of depression. And then absent or limited social support or isolation is a huge one. So isolation is definitely a risk factor, especially for our youth. And then loss. So, and then think outside the box with loss. This isn't just, they've had somebody in their family that's died. But maybe for our youth, it was a relationship loss. So maybe they are, high school sweetheart, maybe that relationship ended. And to us, maybe as an adult outside looking in, we think, you're going to be okay, everything's going to be okay, but to them, it's not going to be okay, and they feel like they just can't live without that person. Social loss, the bullying that's going on, we have whole separate presentations on bullying and suicide, because the bullying that's going on for our kids is just leading to such an increase in social loss, and then that isolation factor as well. So if you have a child in your life that's also being bullied, this could be a risk factor as well for suicide. And then I have financial and job loss, but that's more for also the school loss. So for our youth, it could be that they move to a new city and changing schools. And to them, that's a big social loss and the loss of their previous, community that they used to live in and maybe also their school. So and kind of something to touch upon with risk factors is I kind of want to, if you don't mind going back to the risk factors real quick, I do want to touch upon the fact that there's a lot of risk factors for suicide. Also, if you're looking at this and you're thinking, oh, well, I have a youth in my life that has a lot of these risk factors. Oh, no, now they're probably thinking about suicide. That's not the case. We just know the information behind it. We want people to be aware of what a lot of the risk factors are with youth suicide. But really, the next part, which is the warning signs, is if you have to kind of take some key things from this presentation, which is usually what you do in any kind of workshop or any presentation that you go to, one would be that resource that I shared earlier, and you can literally put it in your phone. That way, if you forget everything I told you today, you automatically have a 24-hour resource. But also, the warning signs are really, really important. And what's interesting about the warning signs that I'm going to go through next is on World Suicide Prevention Day, which just was on September 10th, a lot of the leaders in the field of suicidology came together and wanted to get specific information on warning signs that were unique to our youth. So there was a lot of, there's warning signs published out there, there's a lot of information on warning signs for the, general population, but what's really nice is these are new that are specific to youth suicide. So they are, you know, meant to as warning signs for youth suicide, which is just, it's just really nice now that we have them dedicated for this age group. You'll also see that we use the word invitations. So the world of suicidology, we're trying to really change our language when it comes to talking about suicide. You might have heard me say died by suicide or completed suicide. So we are trying to use that instead of committed suicide, because it sounds like committed suicide almost sounds like a crime. And we don't want those that are thinking about suicide having that negative connotation with it as well. So even with warning signs, when you hear like warning signs, it makes you think of a big alarm or, you know, watch out. It just sounds kind of negative. And invitations is really meant to change the, replace the language of warning signs to using invitations, because we really feel that everyone having thoughts about suicide does invite and want help. They just don't know how to ask for it most of the time because of stigma, because of many other reasons. People are not as, you know, don't feel as comfortable coming right out and telling us that they're having thoughts about suicide. So that's just kind of a couple of quick things. Just wanted to give you guys the information about why we have the word invitations up there. So with our youth warning signs, the good news is they are present in 4 out of 5 completed suicides. So there are warning signs for suicide. Sometimes people think that there aren't a lot of warning signs, but we definitely have them. So the trickier end on that is you'll notice as we go through them that they're typically not the second bullet point, which is the verbal, the first bullet point, which is talking about suicide and making a plan. We do have those people that are going to come right and tell us that, hey, you know, I'm going through a lot, and you know, the student says or youth says, you know, I'm thinking about killing myself. You know, we do have the youth that will come right out and tell us, but it's definitely not as common. A lot of the warning signs are changes in mood and changes in behavior. And from the helping profession or the caregiver, I mean, standpoint, which would be all of you guys, whether you're, you know, a parent, a professional, a teacher, whatever role you are, you know, as somebody that's wanting to help a youth that might be at risk for suicide. It makes it a little tricky sometimes, but we say that what would be important is to review these warning signs and then also use your intuition. Just by coming to a workshop like this, reviewing some of the warning signs, you're automatically going to be more likely to pick up on somebody that's at risk for suicide. So we're going to talk about how to use our intuition when we're helping those that might be at risk for suicide. So back to our warning signs. So we do have the talking about or making a plan for suicide. So we definitely have our youth that are coming right out and telling us that they're thinking about suicide. So from the caregiver, which would be all of you guys out there that are wanting to help, of course we don't want any of our youth to be thinking about suicide, but if they are going to be thinking about suicide, this is something that we would prefer so that we know we're on the same page. You know, the caregiver, again, which would be all of you guys out there that are willing to help, know that, okay, this youth is struggling and struggling with suicide. It's clear cut. We know that's what's going on. A lot of these other ones are a little bit more ambiguous. Expressing hopelessness about the future. So you might hear a youth say something like, I don't know why I was born. I don't think I was meant to be on this earth. Nobody loves me. I don't think I can, you know, keep going like I'm going right now. So it's a little tricky about those statements I just used is, you know, could it be suicide that that person's struggling with? Right, that the youth is struggling with from hearing statements like that? Potentially, yes. Could it also not be suicide and be something else that they're struggling with emotionally? Yes. Okay, and I do have a point to this after I go through that. So keep that in mind. It's a little bit more, you know, on the ambiguous side. Displaying severe and overwhelming emotional pain or distress. And then showing worrisome behavioral cues. Marked changes in behavior is what I talked about. And then it says particular in the presence of the warning signs, of the above warning signs. So this includes, so this kind of breaks down that one bullet point. So withdrawal from or changes in social connections, so that's what we kind of talked about in the previous slide. So if you're seeing a change in behavior, a withdrawal or a change in the social connection, that can be a definite warning sign or invitation for our youth. A change in sleep, so an increased or decreased change in sleep. Anger or hostility that seems out of character for the context. Out of character and a big change in behavior and mood, those things are kind of some key points here because it's something that's just not typical for that youth, right? Recent increased agitation or irritability, so you're seeing that word recent, right? So it's a change. And then the next one, which we see a lot with our youth, is writing or drawing about suicide or death. You know, a lot of us, whether we be youth or adults, express ourselves in so many different ways, and a lot of us aren't comfortable having a one-on-one discussion or group discussion about our feelings and what we're struggling with. And many of us express ourselves in art or poetry or singing or whatever it might be. So it's important to remember that when it comes to warning signs. So if you're picking up on any themes of potential suicide or death in like artwork, for example, the biggest message is to not ignore that. So that is, it can be definitely a warning sign for suicide. So I'm taking this kind of a step further with our invitation / warning sign. So if you're concerned about a youth, so if you're sitting in, you know, sitting here today or listening to this right now and you're thinking of a youth and you're thinking, you know, this, I'm concerned about this youth, you can ask yourself some of these questions to get a better picture about maybe if this person could be struggling with suicide. So it says, has the youth shown or shared any of the following? Talking about wanting to die or to be dead, about suicide, or have they been cutting or burning themselves? I will do a quick side note. With cutting and burning, there is the difference between cutting or burning yourself with the intent to die. You're doing it because you want to die. And then there's also the cutting or burning yourself in the attempt to release some anxiety and some emotional pain. So there is that difference, but it still is going to be a warning sign for suicide. So if you have somebody that is cutting or burning, you still want to ask if they're struggling with suicide. They may not be, but they may be as well because it is a warning sign for suicide. Okay, and then so you ask, that's the first one. And the second one is you can ask yourself this, is the youth feeling like things will never get better, seeming like they are in a terrible emotional pain, like something is deeply wrong inside and they can't make it go away, or that they're struggling to deal with a big loss in their life? So you can ask yourself that about that youth. Or is your gut telling you to be worried because they have withdrawn from everyone and everything, have become more anxious or on edge, and seem unusually angry or just don't seem like themselves? So these are some kind of questions you can ask yourself that are a little easier to grasp than kind of a list of warning signs, where you can kind of see that maybe, you know, maybe I am concerned about this youth and maybe I do need to find out if they're struggling with thoughts about suicide. So what I'm going to show you guys next is I'm going to give you some actual examples of warning signs that youth have done, so you guys can kind of put, you know, some real examples to this problem and then to these examples of the different warning signs. So these first two, there, hopefully you guys can see them pretty good. These are actually two different drawings that were done, and you see the title that says ambivalence and withdrawal. So we'll start with the one that says ambivalence. These were done by a high school student that did, unfortunately, later in life die by suicide. But we did want to give you guys these examples because these were found after he, unfortunately, had died by suicide. And so the family was like, you know, I just really wish that I would have seen these because they were actually initialed and dated by the teacher. And so the parents just didn't, you know, never were able to see these. So the first one you can see, it looks like, it almost looks like the person's kind of hanging on, but the world's closing in on him. So the reason why we have that ambivalence piece at the top is because the family is the one, the surviving family that had their loved one die by suicide, they're the ones who put the titles up here. So obviously the only person who knew exactly what he was trying to portray in his artwork was the, you know, the young man that died by suicide. But we have ambivalence because it does look like he's hanging on here. And then withdrawal, we had this actual piece of artwork up in our office in LA, and it's this huge, huge, huge canvas and this little drawing in the corner. So even with, you know, I'm not an art therapist, I don't have a good art background, but it's very obvious that there's withdrawal going on, even on the actual medium of artwork itself. Okay. So this next one, and this is found with that prior group. Pictures. So these were all found together. So we have passive or active ideation. So passive meaning, you know, I'm having thoughts about suicide, you know, life is so hard right now. I hope that, you know, when I walk home from school that maybe a car hits me. And then active ideation meaning, you know, I have having thoughts about suicide. I'm kind of, you know, I was on this part of the continuum of suicide. I've decided I'm actually going to act on my thoughts about suicide and I'm going to walk into traffic. Right? So it could be that. We don't know, only he knows. I will also tell you an example of, with youth suicide, I think we often think that it's our adolescents that are affected. And I want to tell you, I worked in a residential group home for girls that had been severely, severely and emotionally disturbed and abused. So they had every type of abuse you could ever imagine. And we had five-year-olds making suicide attempts. And that picture reminded me because there was actual situations where we had little kids trying to run into traffic or jumping out of a window. So it's not as common, actual suicidal attempts with that age group is definitely not as common with our older youth, like adolescents and college age. But I just am saying that to kind of increase our awareness that suicidal thoughts can even happen in our really young ones. Okay, moving back to the examples. So this is an example that, this is a social media example. So we know that social media is something that our youth are definitely using. And you know what, in the field of suicidology, we are behind on this. But I want to give you this example. This is actually from my personal life. We have this two-day training that our organization does that's really detailed about how to do a suicide intervention and assessment and safety planning. So I was talking about suicide and teaching a group of people for 2 days straight. And I was actually home, and I was putting my little son to bed at the time. I have two little boys, so my baby at the time. And I'm scrolling through my Instagram. I know, don't judge me. I'm on Instagram. But I'm scrolling through my Instagram, and I see this post. Do you mind going back to it really quick? Okay, and maybe you can just keep that up for a little bit. So it says, I'm starting to give up on life. So this was actually posted by one of my cousins. And my cousins, there's a ton of us. There's about 25 cousins that are really, really close. And I know that this person, this cousin of mine, is very highly connected to many of those cousins. So I looked to see, this was posted actually 6 hours before I even got to it. And so my first thought was like, okay, this was 6 hours ago. You know, this is a clear, to me, clear invitation to suicide as a warning sign. You know, I'm starting to give up on life. I also knew him well. I know that the family knows him well, that he has had thoughts about suicide previously. Again, so I looked, and there was only one little comment that didn't have much to it of the, like, 600 people that were either friends or following, however it is, on Instagram. So I got, you know, I put my little son to bed, and I called, and it's kind of a long story, but I ended up getting in touch with this person. He was doing okay. He was struggling with suicidal thoughts. But I found out later that a lot of the family members, a lot of those cousins I mentioned, and a lot of people had seen it, and they just didn't do anything with that information, not because they didn't care, but because they just didn't know what to do. They didn't know what to say. You know, so one of the biggest messages, if you're seeing posts on social media or just general clear warning signs, is just please don't ignore it and don't think that somebody else did something. You know, my other thought was, you know, I work in this field. Could someone have called me? I would have helped you out. But remember, with our social media posts, try to get in touch with our youth. Try to get in touch with, you know, a parent or caregiver. I had another, a friend's daughter posted something on Facebook about killing herself, and I got in touch with that mom right away. You know, so little things like that, don't ignore it, is kind of the big message right now with social media, and then we really need to step it up in the field of suicidology to really match what's happening out there with that. Okay. So this is a note. This was found before the youth ended up making the suicide attempt. So happy ending to the story. This person is doing really well. It's a little blurry, but it says, "To family, I love you. I hope you all get my last picture I sent you guys. Just know that I loved you all, and bye." So again, this is pretty clear, right, that this is a clear invitation/warning sign to suicide. And in this example, like I mentioned, the family was actually able to identify and get this note and moved right away with it and got that person help. So happy ending to that story. Okay, so before we get into the next portion, we went over the warning signs for suicide. We went over risk factors. We learned a good resource, which is the 24-hour suicide crisis hotline, and then we went over those warning signs as invitations. But I do want to mention that, like I said here, there's, you know, this long list of warning signs, and really is about using your intuition. You know, just by being here, you're, you know, getting more awareness that this is happening to our youth. This is a big problem. You saw it was the, depending on the age category, our second or third leading cause of death, that our youth are out there, and they're out there, and many of them are having thoughts about suicide, right? So just having that awareness, and then at least seeing the list of warning signs and knowing kind of the main point that I said, that not all of the warning signs are that verbal, "I'm thinking of killing myself," right? So that a lot of them are picking up on big changes or changes in mood or changes in behavior. So with that, even if you have that little, you know, voice in your head that's thinking, "Hey, this person, this child or this adolescent is really struggling with something emotionally, and you know what? I'm concerned it might be suicide." So then we're saying, please use that intuition. Don't ignore that intuition. You might be wrong. You know, when you ask, we'll get into the next steps on what you can do next if you are concerned about a loved one. But if you ask a loved one if they're thinking about suicide, ask a youth, and they laugh in your face and say no, then you know what? That's good. And you know what? You're not putting the idea in your head, because a lot of people say, well, you know, what if you ask them about if they're thinking about suicide and they hadn't thought about suicide, and then are you giving them that idea? There's a ton of research to back this up. By asking about suicide and talking about suicide, it will not plant that idea in their head. So what you're telling them, if you get that no, and we're talking about how to ask and go through that step. So if you've asked a youth if they're thinking about suicide and you got that no, and even if they laughed or whatever their response was, you know what? You also just communicated to them that you are there to talk about any other subject under the sun that they're struggling with emotionally, because you just asked them about a life or death topic of suicide. And if you get that yes, you know, you might be one of the first people that is willing to sit and just listen to, you know, what's going on for them. And it's going to feel like a huge relief that there's actually somebody that has, you know, pointed this out or been a support or being a support for them. So I am going to move on to the steps on how to help an at-risk youth that you think might be having thoughts about suicide. So we've broken it down into kind of three main steps. And we're going to go through those. And these look really simple. If you look at these, I mean, ask, listen, and link, right? They sound really simple. They're really, really hard to do. So I don't want to discount that. I don't want to take that away because, you know, just by being here, you guys are doing a lot to help. And doing these things like asking someone if they're having thoughts about suicide, and usually it could be a youth that you're highly connected to. So maybe it's your own child. Maybe you're a teacher and it's, you know, a student in your class that you really care about. And it can be really hard to ask these questions, especially when we really, really care, and all of us do really care. And then listening, when we get into how that works, I mean, listening to why a child or an adolescent wants to die, that is really difficult to do. To sit there and actually listen to them when they're struggling with all this emotional pain and thoughts about death, it is really difficult to do. Linking them up is a little bit, if you know the resources, at least know the resources, feels a little bit better because it feels like you're doing something, you know, like you like have an answer on how to help. But the other two parts are so, so, so important, and you can't skip to just linking them to somebody else. They're going to feel discounted, unheard, and they're going to feel like you don't care. So now we're going to break those steps up. So we're going to go to the first one. So ask. So you're thinking, hey, you know, I'm concerned about this one youth in my life. I remember those warning signs that Jacqueline talked about in the training. Or, hey, maybe it is just kind of my intuition. It's that little voice in my head that's saying, hey, something's going on with this child, this adolescent. I'm concerned it might be suicide. So if you're thinking that you can think about some of these warning signs, or you're concerned about a loved one, or you're concerned about a youth in your life, the most important thing to do, if you think that they're thinking about suicide and they haven't come right out and told you, hey, I'm thinking about killing myself, you have to ask them. That slide back up, sorry. Can you go back one? Sorry about that. The most important thing to do is you have to ask someone at risk. You have to ask, are you thinking about killing yourself? I heard the speaker mention earlier, it's also about the way that you ask. So so I'm going to give you a couple of examples. So, you know, I'm concerned about a loved one, this imaginary person sitting right here, this is a youth. And if I say something like, you know, Sarah, I'm just, I'm kind of worried about you, and it just seems like you haven't really been yourself, and I know that, you know, a year ago, you know, your dad passed away, and, you know, but you're not thinking of, like, doing anything to hurt yourself or anything like that, right? Okay, so one, you can tell my body language. I was backing up. I was even kind of, my hands are even going like this because I was, you know, a little, you could tell I was pretty afraid of the topic myself. So asking the question, also I didn't even really ask a question, I didn't even have a question at the end of that. It was kind of a statement, like you're not trying to do anything, right? So the way that I ask that, it comes from a good place. You can tell that I care, but you can also tell I'm not comfortable with the topic of suicide. It's very clear. That's going to be easily communicated to this at-risk youth that's sitting right here, this imaginary youth over here. So it's all about the way that you ask it. You want to ask it clearly and directly. You also want to stay away from words like, are you thinking of hurting yourself? Because there's a lot of definitions of hurting yourself. You know, there's, like I mentioned, with cutting, so that's a form of hurting yourself, but it doesn't always mean that the person's hurting themselves with the intent to die. So it's not totally clear if it's suicide or not. So that's why we say you want to ask clearly and directly, are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about killing yourself? So that you guys are on the same page. That person at risk, that youth at risk, and you as the caregiver or the helper, you guys are on the same page to know if this is suicide you're talking about or something else. Let's go back. So another way, if you go back to the previous slide a little bit, thank you. So another way that you can do this is, you know, reflect upon why you're asking that question to then follow it up with a question. A lot of people want feedback on, can you give me an example, like how can you actually ask this? So what that would be is, you know, I've noticed, you know, A, B, C, and D, you know, I'm really concerned about you. I really care about you, and I want to know, are you thinking about suicide? You know, you can say, you can actually list off the warning signs. You can actually even say, if it's just the intuition, because you can't pinpoint some of those warning signs, you can say that. You can be yourself. You can say, you know what, I can't even pinpoint it. I just know you're going through a lot. I've seen you crying. I know that you're not, you know, hanging out with your friends like you normally do, and I can just tell something's really, really going on. I know that suicide's really common. I know that I really care about you, and I want to know, are you thinking about suicide? So you can see that my body language was, I was like stronger, I was much more clear, I was looking the person right in the eye. So the way that you ask that question really makes a big difference, because if that youth at risk catches on that you're not comfortable with this topic on any level, they're not going to feel safe giving you the answer. In most of the cases, if you ask that question pretty confidently, you're going to get the correct answer from them. Because they're going to feel that body language, they're going to feel that delivery, and they're going to feel that they can tell you the truth. And again, if you get that no, great. You know, then you're still saying that, hey, well, if it's not suicide, I'm here to listen. What else is going on? I know that something's going on with you. Right? Okay, so if you get that yes, so again, the best way to ask that question, reflect upon why you're asking that question to begin with, then follow it up clearly and directly with the, are you thinking about suicide or are you thinking about killing yourself? With that, I challenge you guys, next time you're by yourself, whether you're driving home from this event or taking a shower, whatever you're doing, practice saying this. It does not come out very easily. Even clinicians that have been doing assessments for years, I will tell you, I've done lots of trainings for clinicians, and then we do some like role playing where they're practicing the asking question, and a lot of our clinicians even have a hard time being clear and direct. So I challenge you guys to just at least once, and if you really want to take on the challenge, you just say it 10 times. Practice saying, you know, I'm concerned about A, B, or C, or D. A, B, C, or D, I love you. I'm concerned about you. Are you thinking about suicide? However you want to practice it. All right, but I urge you to at least practice the sentence, are you thinking about suicide? Because it'll really increase your confidence when you ever are, if you ever are in that situation. So if you get that yes, so you've asked, you know, are you thinking about suicide to a youth, and you get the yes. So the first thing that you want to do is you want to follow it up with, first you want to take a deep breath, right? So you get that yes. And you want to take a deep breath like that because you kind of want to get on the same page as them. And you want to follow it up with any empathetic statement that you can possibly think of. So if that's, wow, thank you so much for sharing that with me. That must have been really hard to share that, and I'm here. Any empathetic statement, there is no perfect way to say it. Just anything empathetic that comes out is great. So I mentioned taking that deep breath. So with a crisis like this, when you have someone in front of you and a child or adolescent that is thinking about suicide, you know, it's life or death crisis, right? You're concerned about them taking their life. And it's automatic that it's going to create some anxiety in you as the caregiver, right? That's normal. It's normal to feel like that, even if you've done, you know, if you're a clinician, you've done, you know, 1,000 suicide interventions, you're still going to get some of that. Also, because the timing is never perfect with this, right? You might be thinking you have somewhere else to be, or maybe if it's your child that you've identified that's suicidal, maybe you have another, you know, your other child sitting right there. It's just that the timing and the situation is never perfect. So the reason why you take that deep breath is to help manage some of the anxiety feelings that come with that, and then to also just kind of get on the same page with them, just kind of take a deep breath, right? Because this is you know, a youth in front of us, and you know, and they're thinking about suicide. So take a deep breath, and then follow it up with any empathetic statement that comes out of your mouth. So that's, wow, I'm really proud of you. Thank you so much for sharing that. Okay? Oh, these are my funny picture that we added. So we have this to mention that this is what we really are feeling inside when you get that yes. Like, oh my gosh, really? This is scary because this is, you know, life or death. I know, funny little pictures. Okay. Or this. I know, he's trying to make you guys laugh here with a serious subject. Is it working? Okay. And our first reaction is to do that link part. So just quickly, you know, well, you know, you don't want to kill yourself. You know, I know this hotline number, and we're gonna call them right away. And you know, so we're quick to want to just put a Band-Aid on that situation and you know, pull them into safety really quickly. But that's not what they need yet, because they're gonna feel kind of discounted and unheard, and they're not gonna feel as comfortable maybe opening up about what they're struggling with. So thank you. Okay. Oh, forgot about this little guy. What they really need is we have it light, right? So we also use kind of the analogy, if I was a youth that was suicidal, and I'm sitting in this room all by myself in darkness, so in my own kind of pain. I'm just sitting here surrounded by dark emotional pain. And, you know, one of you was outside as this caregiver, that is basically this person that cares, that want to help, and knows that I'm, you know, in here by myself, sitting in my own emotional pain. There's two approaches. You could, you know, swing the door open, flip the lights on, and run down to the stage, tackle me and throw me into safety, the life side, right, the light. Or you could kind of open the door. You could ask my name. You could ask if you can turn on kind of the dimmer lights and walk a little bit closer. You can ask me, you know, what's going on, and basically take your time walking over to me, listening to why I'm sitting here in my own emotional pain and what's going on with me in particular, what's going on in my particular situation, and then slowly leading me to safety, to that life side. So that's why that light, supposed to mention, that's really what they need, is they need that second scenario. So imagine if you, you know, are a youth and you're thinking about suicide, it can feel really unsafe when someone just grabs you really quick and wants you to and bring you to safety, when, you know, what you need is that supportive kind of steps to get you out to that light. Okay. So listen. So you've asked clearly and directly. You reflected upon the warning signs or those reasons why you're asking about suicide to begin with. Then you followed up by asking that question clearly and directly. Are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about killing yourself? And then you've taken a deep breath, right? So a deep breath. And then you've followed up with any empathetic statement you can think of. So that's, wow, thank you so much for sharing. I'm here. All right, so the next part that you want to do is listen. And you want to be listening to their reasons for wanting to die. And it says allow them to the space to talk about that pain that they're feeling in. This is such a difficult thing to do, especially because we care. We wouldn't have asked the question to begin with if we didn't care. Again, if you have a personal connection to this youth, it is going to be even harder to do this. To sit there and listen to why they want to die is just such a difficult thing to do, but it's such an important, important, important part. So again, remember that when you want to jump to that Band-Aid approach, jump to giving the hotline or calling somebody really quick first, unless they're in the middle of an attempt, then that would be a different scenario. But first, you know, they need you to listen. We can go ahead to the next one. This brings it up a little bit. So this is taking listen kind of and breaking it down a little bit more. So the green is obviously what we want to do for this listening section, and the red is the part that we kind of want to stay away from. So listen carefully, right? Expressing concern and empathy, identifying feelings, and telling them that they're not alone is a big part. By saying, yes, I'm hearing you. Yes, it sounds like you're in a lot of emotional pain. It sounds like you're going through so much right now. You know, I'm here, and you know what? You're not alone. There's other people that think about suicide, and I'm so glad that you've told me so that you don't feel alone anymore. So saying things like that. Taking thoughts seriously. That's an important one. A lot of times, especially if it's somebody you know, that maybe it's a youth in your own family, you never want to think that suicide could be affecting your family, that you could have, you know, a child in your life that's thinking about suicide. So sometimes we don't take it seriously. Or there might be a situation where we've had a youth that has told people many, many times that they're having thoughts about suicide. So then they, you know, aren't maybe taken seriously if they've said that they're thinking about suicide again. So we say in all circumstances, you want to take thoughts about suicide very seriously. Moving away from, the red, the stuff we want to stay away from, so all of this comes from a very good place. It comes from that Band-Aid approach, which is what most people naturally want to do. They want to skip over that listening part. So again, if you go straight to giving them resources or straight to calling someone right away, again, unless they're in the middle of a suicide attempt, then you always want to get them to immediate safety. It's going to make them feel like you're, when you move away from those painful topics, it's going to make them feel like you're not listening, that they're not heard. They're probably going to shut down a little bit and probably not going to feel as comfortable telling you what's going on with them. Offering immediate reassurance, this again, this comes from such a good place. Like we definitely understand that. But when you say things like, everything's going to be fine, they don't feel, and especially right now, that everything's going to be fine. So when you say something like that, again, it comes from such a good place, and we definitely know that, but it's going to feel discounting to them. And it says minimizing and discounting. So how do you listen? How do you kind of start that process if you look at this from a step-by-step? So you've asked clearly, you've reflected upon the warning signs to then follow it up to clearly asking about suicide. So I've noticed A, B, C, and D. I'm really concerned about you. If it's a personal relationship or whatever it might be, I love you. I care about you. I know that suicide is really common, and I want to know, are you thinking about suicide? So you get that yes, you take a deep breath, and you followed up with any empathetic statement that you can offer here, and then you're into this listening stage, because remember it was ask and then listen is this next step. So how you do that, you can say, you know what, I'm here to listen, let's talk about it. What's going on for you? You know, can you tell me, you know, what's brought you to the place where you're having thoughts about suicide right now? And so you, that's kind of the way you can just kind of an open-endedly sit there and listen with them. And remember, there's not an exact time frame, but even if you spent, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes doing that listening, that's such an important piece than rather just kind of jumping to the end there. Okay. And so the next step over here is link. So this is, so remember we had ask and then listen. Again, very, those are two really difficult things to do, but so, so important. And then link, which is link them to help. So this could be a safe adult if they're, I put that because I didn't know actually if there would for sure be any youth here. And there might be some youth listening or that see this later. And I do have a slide for youth as well. But sometimes it's a, we know that, actually not sometimes, a lot of the times our youth are telling other youth that they're thinking about suicide and they're not telling safe adults. And then the youth that has that information that their friend is thinking about suicide doesn't know what to do with that information, and then so therefore doesn't do anything with it. And it's so important, and I will cover this again because I have a separate slide, it's so important to let them know that they have to tell a safe adult about this. So this is not one, a secret that you can keep. We'll say from like youth to youth, you know, if I was a youth and this person over here was a youth, and you know, I told her we're best friends, and I said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about killing myself, and you know, I don't know what to do, and et cetera, et cetera. And if that person didn't do anything, and then I ended up dying by suicide, you know, how would it feel for that other person to live their life, you know, knowing that I had died? That is not to say that it would be that person's fault. That is not the message. The message is you know, please tell a safe adult, because it can feel really terrible to live with that. Okay, so moving back to link. So link to a safe adult, the suicide hotline, and remember that when in doubt, even if you put that in your phone, and even if you're here thinking, I don't think I have any youth in my life that are thinking about suicide, you never, ever know, and that hotline is not just for our youth. Yes, this is a presentation on youth suicide awareness, but remember that that's a resource for all ages. We actually had our youngest caller on the line was 5, and 101, I think it was, for our oldest caller. So again, the hotline is for all different ages. So back to linking. So, can you back up one slide? Thank you. So linking to a safe adult, the suicide hotline can help them stay safe, and or a helping professional too. Okay, thank you. And taking link over here. So it says collaboration with a new caregiver. So caregiver meaning, you know, and it could be very different in a lot of different situations. So it could be that the first step for linking is telling another adult. So maybe it's a, I'm just going to make up a situation here. Maybe it's a mom and a dad, and their adolescent daughter was the one that is suicidal, and the mom was the one who identified her as suicidal after asking her and having that conversation. So maybe the first step is even talking to the dad in that situation to come up with a team approach. So we just say collaboration no matter what the situation is. Maybe it's a school counselor at a school has identified a student, and maybe the first step is to let another person on the campus know. Whatever it is, give choices to our youth, even if they're really small. We know in this situation, it can feel like there's not a lot of choices, right? But even if it's, you know, I'm going to, you know, I have, if it is a mom and dad situation, I'm going to have to call mom and dad because we really need to work together to keep you safe and to be a team on this. You know, but, you know, let's talk about this. You know, do you feel more comfortable talking to mom or talking to dad first? Do you want me to start the conversation, or do you want to pick up the phone and call, and I'll be sitting here as a support, and then you can pass the phone to me? So little things. We're going to walk over to talk with this person. You know, do you want to grab a water? You know, I'll be here with you every step of the way. And going back here, so giving the choices, even if they're small, explaining everything you're doing and why. If you're calling a parent, if you're getting another parent on board or another caregiver, tell the youth everything that you're doing, because it can feel really scary when things are happening and you don't know, you know, what's happening. Even if you, like, this is kind of a funny example, but most all of us have gone to the dentist before. But imagine if you had never been to the dentist before and they were, you know, filling a cavity and you didn't know, have any idea what that would be like. Like, you didn't know there was going to be Novocaine involved or the drill or any of that. So again, the more you know about things, you're going to be more comfortable with kind of a situation that can feel a little scary or out of control. And then summarize what you know to the caregiver. So even if the first step is calling this hotline, right? So maybe you're thinking, okay, I have this youth in front of me. I'm concerned. I've done a really good job letting them know that I care about them. I've asked about suicide. This person is struggling with suicide. And I've, you know, listened to, you know, the pain that they're feeling. And the next step is, you know, maybe it's the middle of the night and you want to call the 24-hour suicide crisis hotline. So you can still do the beginning of that call. You can still pick up the phone if, you know, and you can give choices to that youth and you can, you know, explain what's going on and then put the youth on the phone and then follow up after. So again, you want to be letting the youth know everything that you're doing and linking that person to the next support. And then we have stay as long as you need to. Again, it's hard to give every scenario because every situation is going to be very unique. It's going to be, you know, where the person physically is, who the caregiver is, what the relationship is. But again, stay as long as you need to. If you're actually like physically handing it off to maybe like a therapist or something like that, you can say, you know, do you want me to, you know, sit here with you? Or if it's, letting a caregiver know, like letting a parent know, like, do you want me to, you know, sit here with you while, you know, while you're talking to your mom or whatever it might be. So we wanted to share with you guys a new app. It's called the Safety Plan My 3 app. So we know that many of our, it's not just the youth, let's face it. Most of us are on our phones, our smartphones. So this is a free app, and it's highly customizable, as you see. It's free. We have a Spanish version coming soon. It's actually not through Dee Dee Hirsch, but it's something that we definitely do a lot of outreach because it has it kind of built in to help that person help identify their specific warning signs. There's resources on there, distractions, just things they can do to help should they be having thoughts about suicide in the future. So we just wanted to share that with you guys. We urge you to download it. Like I said, it's free. It's a really great resource, and it's something to definitely take a look at. Okay. Okay, so I told you I'm going to have a slide from youth to youth. And again, even if there's no youth in this room, if anyone listens to this now or in the future, it's so important. Like I mentioned, a lot of times our youth are going to our youth first if they're having thoughts about suicide. And a lot, I can tell you many, many examples. We're getting lower on time, but one quick one, we had a 17-year-old girl who had texted five of her friends that she was going to kill herself an hour later, and she texted exactly when she was going to kill herself, how she was going to kill herself, and where. So these five friends didn't know what to do with the information. They cared about her, loved her, just didn't know what to do with this information. The 17-year-old girl had also talked about suicide in the past, so it was a little bit of the friends thinking, well, I don't know if she's really going to, you know, going to kill herself. Unfortunately, this girl did follow through with exactly what was written on the text and did unfortunately die by suicide. So again, I want to be very clear, it is not anybody's fault. It is not the, you know, the five friends that had that information's fault. But we've, a lot of those friends have actually been in our supportive services because they're dealing with a lot of that, a lot of that guilt. So again, the biggest message is if, from youth to youth, if you've identified, if somebody has come to you, another child or adolescent has come with you and told you that they're thinking about suicide, please, please, please let somebody else know. If you're out there and if you're a youth or if you're an adult for that matter, any age, anybody out there, if you're thinking about suicide, please, please, please don't try to handle this alone. And you're not alone. There's so many people. You saw the statistics, and there's help out there. We have dedicated, you know, crisis lines just for this. This is how common it is. And this is not that one crisis center that I told you the number for. There's, you know, many of those. There's about over 160 different call centers in the United States for this. So please reach out. Please tell somebody, and please know that you are not alone, and it shouldn't be on you to handle this all by yourself. So that's kind of just that big message. We really want to make sure people are letting others know that they're thinking about suicide. Just if they had a medical condition, if they broke their leg, they would go to the doctor. You know, people would be able to see what they're struggling with, and you get, you know, people that care that ask, you know, can I open the door for you or things like that. With emotional struggles, it's not always something that you can see. And so it's important that people are able to feel more comfortable reaching out if they're thinking about suicide. Okay. And it said on there, if you being a good friend can help save a life. So I just want to quickly, one, there's a ton of amazing resources at Saddleback, here at Saddleback. So I definitely take advantage of those resources here. Also, just quickly, I want to let you guys know what other services are in Orange County in addition to the amazing Saddleback services is Dee Dee Hirsch has an office that I work out of, and we have services for those that have lost a loved one to suicide. So that's counseling and support groups for all ages. We also have a support group for suicide attempt survivors, and this is right now just for adults. So this is adults that have made a suicide attempt and have survived. And then we do community outreach. So we do things like this. We speak on panels. We have full, if you're a clinician, we have full detailed clinical presentations as well. Okay. So this is a list of resources, and then, of course, Saddleback is a major resource. We have 911 in case there's ever a suicide attempt in progress. So if you have a youth in front of you or an adult where they are in the middle of a suicide attempt, of course you want to stop all of that. You're not going to follow this Ask, Listen link. You're going to go straight to getting them immediate help. Our suicide prevention crisis hotline, again, the biggest message of today, if you are out there, you're thinking about suicide, you are not alone. There's a lot of people that care. You can talk to someone that does care. And also, we have that 24-hour suicide crisis hotline. And the number, again, there, because I want to make sure everybody has it, is 877-727-4747. And then our office line is there as well, and I'll have business cards in the back. Centralized assessment team. OC Links is a great resource line to find other behavioral or health supports and that are specific, so you can let them know exactly what you're looking for and where in Orange County you're looking for it, and they'll help you with that as well. And then we have 211, which is a social services information and directory. That's a little bit more general. And then we have a teen line, which is a great support for our teens. It's a teen-to-teen support, and actually our hotline provides the backup coverage for this support. And they're not part of DD Hirsch, but we are connected in that sense where we provide the backup coverage. And then these, it's, like I mentioned, it's teen-to-teen, but these teens that are the crisis counselors are highly, highly, highly supervised and have adults, obviously, on staff that are doing the supervision. So that number is listed there as well. And then Trevor Line, which is another great resource. So I think there's one more slide here. So that's my information.
Well, a lot of information here. I truly hope it's been helpful. Blog Talk Mom?
Yes, Sister Starla, again, I must, from the bottom of my heart, thank you and Wild Bill for doing a program that was excellent. That lady is excellent. It was not filled with, like patronizing or whatever. It was just very factual, like you said, and it leads you to the right response. Because, I know in my life I've handled situations that, you look back after you think, oh, wow, why did I say that? Or why did, but she's given us every resource that we could use. And she didn't talk specifically about prayer or letting someone praying with that person. And I don't know if that was just understood, that you would. And then sometimes people are not receptive at that point. So it's almost like two different subjects. But that's, I really, 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 really appreciate this program.
Well, it's sad. I can't imagine getting to that point in my life where I would look to that as an out. Sometimes even if we have the Lord, things can get overwhelming. And, well, we have Wild Bill with us. Hello, Wild Bill.
Hello there. I don't know if you can hear me on this headset. Can you hear me?
We hear you.
Yes.
I just want to say that every state has, I was doing some checking on that. They have phone numbers you can call that has to do with suicide prevention, helplines and things. There's national hotline numbers. Those are very easy to find. And the counseling, it follows up after you've been involved with something like this. I think that's very important to understand that this is not something where blame needs to be placed, because there is no way to place blame. And so, but guilt is something that is almost as bad as depression. And so you automatically, most people internalize, what could I, even myself in this situation we're dealing with, like, what could I have done? What could I have said? How did I not know or see some of the things that were there? And so in that process, we need to know
There's nothing wrong with getting these numbers, having them available, especially if you're in leadership in your church, and reach out to these resource numbers. Some of them you're going to get into this new age, pinnacle drugs fix everything, and you just have to work through that till you get one that you feel like you can really understand and earn. There is the website that she gave, the Suicidology. It's got a lot of numbers on there that you can go to, a lot of helpful information. And I think everybody ought to go to that website. I think it was suicidology.com. And take a look at some of that, make some notes, and have that available. And introduce these things to the leadership in your church, to the youth in your church, and to your brothers and sisters in church. Because it's better to offend by being too pushy on the subject now than to go back later and have to deal with the guilt that you might could have done something, or the fact that, you know, sometimes it's hard to do what's right, but you do what's right anyway. And this is one of those situations that we don't need to sweep it under the rug. We don't need to act like it's not there. We need to understand that we're in a spiritual warfare. Satan came to kill, steal, and destroy, and that's his apparatus. I can't even talk here. I'm so upset about what I'm feeling in my heart right now. But he's not changed his M.O. His way of dealing with life is always what it is. And so I just want to encourage everybody, pray for your youth, talk to your youth, plug into your youth, and youth, be there for each other. Because it's true that a lot of times kids tell other kids things they wouldn't tell anybody else. Know your kids' friends. Talk to them. Kind of pick their minds a little bit. See what's going on with your child. Because it could make a difference. And I want to thank you for the kind words there, Blog Talk Mom. It's just, I was really hard to find someone that spoke a language that I sort of felt like related to people in church like you. I noticed that in that plugging in and resource, they left church out of it. I think it's real important that that's where we show our children at that time. This is a resource. God is your resource. He is your ever-present help in time of need. He listens. He cares. He's a friend that's sticking closer than a brother. Those things need to be encouraged during this time, but encourage them with them. Like I said, call the helpline, pray with them. Take time to pray with them. Show an empathy in your prayer as you go for the situation that your child's going through. Do the things right spiritually, and a lot of times the other things just fall into place. And you could probably say more about that than me, Blog Talk Mom. And I don't know if you have anybody else, Charlie, but I got down here, my truck's not running, and I'm out here just kind of hanging out right now waiting for the mechanics to come. But I do want to encourage people to pass this information on. Please, 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 please pass this information on. Deal with it ahead of time and not after. So I love people. I just love people. And I hate the calamity of sin. I hate the calamity of life, the pressures of dealing with things. And we just don't realize that kids deal with a half a brain, and sometimes not that much, because they don't have life experience to deal with like we do. And so this is just something to me. I wish it had been important before, and that I had became aware of some of these resources and things. And there again, that's where the guilt comes in. Don't wait till it gets to be something of guilt and necessity. Do it now. And so I'm beating a dead horse, I know, but I'll turn it back over to you, Stella, and Blog Talk Mom.
Very sad subject, Blog Talk Mom.
I again, appreciate the fact that the research that was done and to pass on these resources, because I'm sure listening and those that will go to the archives, they may not all be Christians. They may not have a clue as what to do when they see these particular symptoms and they're troubled. They may instinctively know that there's something happening, but they really just don't know what to do. And these resources that were mentioned tonight are excellent. And I have a degree in childhood counseling, and everything she said, the direction she went was practical. It was just the way that she brought out that when you approach a child or a person that is considering suicide, there's a way to do that, that they can feel the empathy and the concern and not accusation, which would just put, would just inflame their feeling of inadequacy and wanting to get away from it. I will share briefly that I had attempted suicide in my life, and it was at the point, it was a depression. I was in depression, and in the last situation that came up in my life, I was given a medication that was not conducive for my personality and for my situation. And we hear a lot of people that are on medication. There, it's a pain medication or some medication that literally is just destroys their ability to cope with pressure. And we had a situation here where a man was given a medication, and he was the wife knew that his whole personality was very negative, and he'd never been that way before. And they called the doctor, and they said, "Oh, well, it'll be okay." And he continued, he was just, because he was other situations in his body chemistry. Anyway, he continued to take the medication, and he walked in, and he shot her and turned the gun and killed himself. Now, this is horrible that she didn't die, which was a miracle. But people that are listening, be cautious. If your body is reacting and you're feeling a despondency and that, you know, you're just not coping with things, then charge of that. Get off of certain medications. And be very cautious not to just continue to take any kind of pain medicine. I could name several of them that we had some serious depression that followed it with the people that were taking it. In my situation, it was a hormonal problem that they said, which was very real. I was in my 30s, and I continued to take the medication, and I was sitting in, my point here, but I was sitting in my kitchen. I had two children. I was so depressed. It was just the chemical reaction to the drugs that I was taking were just hideous. And the frustration, the anxiety, the tension, all of that. And so I was considering how I was going to do it, not when, or, you know, but just to work it out, the best way to do it. And a friend, I didn't know her very well at the time, but she came to my house, knocked on the door, and brought a very small gift. It was she had made some type of real tasty instant pudding and put some little jelly beans on top of it and just brought it by. And the fact that she did that altered my entire feelings that day. And then I began to take over and get off of the medication. But my point is, let's love one another. Let's care for one another. We don't know that person that's checking us out or that's waiting on us at a restaurant or that's in a traffic situation. We don't know what they're facing. Could we smile? Could we be friendly? Could we even pray and say, "Lord, if that person has to drive like that, did they get news that a baby is sick? Lord, I don't know, but you know." You know, let the love of God flow through us. It will do a work. It cannot return. It's like the Word of God. It cannot return void if we love one another. It's our greatest weapon that God has given us. People feel it. They're healed by it. I was and have been and still am. And I really appreciate this program. I was apprehensive at first. I don't know, or just I guess the subject itself. And then I have memories. I counseled a lady one time, and she, you know, I couldn't get back with my appointment, and several things came up beyond my control, and she committed suicide. And like Wild Bill said, and like the lady said, the guilt is absolutely overwhelming. The feeling that if you had been there, if you'd said something, done something, anything, it could have altered the situation. So we don't want to carry that with us. We want to be prepared when the situation comes up, know what our directions are, and this could not have been better. Again, I thank you very, very much, Sister Starla and Wild Bill, for giving us that. And they can come back to the archives, listen to it again. You know, the website, we can go to that and download different apps. That it's excellent. It's being prepared, having a plan. So I appreciate that very much. And like Wild Bill said, we've got prayer. It's every day and night, if children of God would say, Lord, we bind those spirits that are coming against our young people, the times that they're being bullied and all of this that's coming against this generation. Lord, we just ask, as he gave the example prayer, Lord, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in this earth as it is in heaven. And we would forgive. We want to be forgiven. Lead us not into temptation. Deliver us from evil. Watch over our young people. Watch over our world and seek God with our whole heart. And he will be found. If his people, it's our responsibility, according to the word of God, to humble ourselves and pray and turn. And then he will heal. He promised he would, and he will. So thank you again, Sister Starla.
Well, I hope this information has been useful. If you have any friends, you can share this with your friends, ones that you know are hurting, if their children are in need, just share this information with them. Lead them to the Blog Talk Radio show, and in the archives, find this program and let it be a help to those who are hurting. We want to thank you, Blog Talk Mom and Wild Bill. We do so appreciate what you guys do for this show. It is definitely a public service, and I do so appreciate both of you. And,
no, we appreciate you, Sister Starla.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. I just could not do it without you. Anyway, I do really appreciate you. You just don't know. But anyway, do you have anything else you want to share with us?
It was excellent. And if there's anybody that would be listening and maybe you are feeling rejection, you're feeling hopeless, and you feel like you're surrounded by darkness, and that you would be, after I found out what the program was going to be about, I looked up several situations in the Bible where people did kill themselves. Some of them, it was their... They felt like no one cared, that they were total failures, that there was no alternative. And there's always a love that would come to, it came to me, it's to anybody, it's available, and that's the love of God. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. For us to believe in him, we will not perish. He is available. And if we just join right now in prayer, Lord, we agree everyone that is listening to the broadcast is mindful of those that are hurting, that feel rejection, that feel wounded, that feel hopeless, that you love them, Lord. Just, we bind the powers of darkness and we loose the light of the world, which is you and your love, dear God. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Jesus. Glory to your mighty name. Amen. Thank you, Lord.
Amen. Amen. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening tonight, and please do be aware, see what's going on around you, and if this could be a help to anybody, just lead them here, get them the information. And we want to thank all who are listening and Blog Talk Mom and Wild Bill for bringing us this show, and we'll see you back here next week at your place. Good night.